Merkle Media.
What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Look, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dave on NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff with two German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault?
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I'm your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Band.video, Vigilante.tv, or you're listening wherever podcasts are served, thanks a bunch. We appreciate it. The website is theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Macroaggressions. I write books. You can go find them on Amazon for sure. Well, we couldn't do the show without our sponsors. Thank you to Legal Shield. They have been in business for 50 years. They have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau, and they're available in Canada and the United States. It's just getting a group of us all together and directing our buying power towards high-powered attorneys in your area. You get a law firm that you'll be working with that'll have you'll have access to everything that they do. Contract negotiations, if you need them to take a look at, create a last will and testament for you, your medical power of attorney, a financial power of attorney. If you got parking tickets, speeding tickets, that, you know, your work wants you to sign some funky new contract of employment that involves medical terminology, talking about forcing you to take procedures you don't want to, you got to send all that stuff to your attorney. Now, normally that will cost a ton of money. You don't want to spend that, but Legal Shield is very affordable. It's $30 a month. It's $1 a day. Get you access to an attorney to take care of a lot of problems. We set up a website specifically for this show, www.don'tgetpushedaround.com. I like the idea of us not being pushed around by people that do have big, high-powered attorneys or people that want to, you know, stores or companies that say, well, you know, we changed our mind. We're not going to do this, you know, sue us, right? Well, you're probably not going to sue them, and that's where it ends. Well, now maybe they'll get a letter from your attorney and things will start to change. So it's not just legal services. They've got ID Shield. They've got paperwork. If you carry a gun, if you're a concealed carry holder, there's things for that. If you run a small business, but you don't have a legal department of your own, you can get that through Legal Shield as well. Just go to the website, take a look, see what you think, see if it's right for you. They tell us that we have equal justice under the law, but I don't think anybody believes that anymore. I think we know. If you've got money, if you've got great attorneys, things start to go your way magically, right? Well, it's time for us to take some of that power back and level the playing field. Don'tgetpushedaround.com. Also, to our newest sponsor, EMP Shield. Boy, I hope you don't need this product, but if you do, it's out there and it works really well. It works so well that the military kind of reached out to them to ask them if they could share some of their technology with them, because it works better than what the military has for their EMP shields. They've got a bunch of really smart people over there designing it. It'll work on your home, your car, your RV, if you've got one, or if you've got a boat or generator, any of those things, it'll work there. You can get a bundle package that you can put on your car and your house. It'll protect you against EMPs, obviously. It'll protect you against solar flares. God forbid we have one of those. But more realistically, it'll protect you against lightning. And I think that's a huge problem depending on where you live in the country. I lived outside of Tampa for a summer, and they don't call their hockey team the Tampa Bay Lightning for nothing, man. It's crazy there. So if you want to protect your house, if you want to protect your stuff, if you are, you know, you want to be proactive as opposed to reactive, EMPshield.com is a great place for you to go. Just check out, read up about it, see if the product is right for you. If you think you like it or you think you need it, use the promo code MACRO. It will save you a bunch of money. They have it set up that way. You can install it yourself. It's fitted to your household circuit breaker with just four wires. It installs like a type 2 surge protector, and there's installation videos on their website or on YouTube. There's plenty out there too. Or you can just have an electrician come in and knock it out for you. So EMPshield.com is the website, promo code MACRO. Well, now that we got the business out of the way, I'm excited for this one. I love this topic. I love this topic so much. We've got Ryder Lee, host of Raised by Giants, with us to talk to us about secret spy programs, psychic spies. Holy shit. What's going on, Ryder? Good to see you again, man.
What's up, Charlie? Thanks for having me, brother. It's been a minute since I've seen you, but it's good to see you, brother. Thanks for having me.
It's good to see you too. And I love, I've gone down this rabbit hole, man. Stanford Research Institute, remote viewing, Hal Puthoff, Pat Price, Ingo Swann, Russell Targ. You know, I mean, for those that don't know, if you've ever seen the movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats, that was based on this group of people. They were operating out of a place called Stanford Research Institute. And I'm interested to hear, you were on Tinfoil Hat talking about this, and we got to talk about it. We just have to. It's so fucking fascinating for people that don't know anything about it. And I think that there's probably like a segment of the population, maybe even a large segment, that just goes, oh, this stuff is fake, man. This remote viewing stuff, it just feels like Uri Geller bending spoons with his mind, and you know, all that magician shit. I feel like David Copperfield would be into it and all this. And then you start to read about who's really financing it, and you're like, oh shit, this is 100% real. And they are definitely looking to get it, you know, whatever advantage they've got, if they can remote view things and, you know, and see what's, you know, inside an envelope or hidden on top of something, they'll do it. So I've been into this for 10 years reading about these people, but you, on the other hand, have done like the real research. For me, it's just been surface level. So I'm excited to hear what you found. What did you find? Like, what's going on over there with this shit?
Well, it's really interesting, Charlie, that you bring up the Men Who Stare at Goats, because that was really based on Lynn Buchanan, which was a part of the Stargate unit at Fort Meade. And I've had him on my show twice now. And really where this started for me was with these secret space program people, these people that claim that they're a part of the secret space program, that they go to space and fight aliens for 20 years, then their age regress and time travel back to the very point that they were taken. They talk about a lot of different things. I tend to call it a conspiracy burrito, because that's really what it is. It's a bunch of conspiracies lumped into one in a new kind of format. So I started researching some of the things that they were talking about, like the MK Ultra programs, like Operation Looking Glass and the Stargate, because they talk about all of these things like they're real legitimate things. And what I found is that they've turned it into something that it's not, you know. And I went back and I read through all of the 149 declassified MK Ultra programs, which there's 149 sub projects of MK Ultra that has been declassified that you can get on and read all about. And I read through all of those and I started finding out really interesting things. And there's five sub projects within the 149 MK Ultra programs that were dedicated to studying psychic abilities, which was dedicated to ESP abilities, to channeling psychokinesis, psychoenergetic phenomenon. And then I'm like, okay, well, they also talk about these secret space program asset people. They talk about, you know, a Stargate project and how it was a project ran by the military to open up a real Stargate, like a portal and stuff, and travel to the moon and travel to Mars and live out an entire 20 years and then age regress back in time, which I already knew that there was a real program called the Stargate Project, Stargate Program. And it was at Fort Meade, and it was to collect intelligence data on foreign assessments to get more information about targets that are not in local perception. So then I started digging into that, and I reached out to a lot of the people that were verified a part of this Stargate program. The first one that I interviewed was Angela Ford. The second one was Lynn Buchanan that I just mentioned that Minister Goetz is based off of. The third one was Dr. David Morehouse. The fourth one was Del Graft. He was basically in charge of all of the remote viewers and actually got it switched from Army intelligence to DIA in 85 and termed the name Stargate. So he just went through a bunch of different changes, a bunch of different name changes and all that. And then I had Dr. Paul Smith on, which he was also a part of the program. So I've reached out to all of these people to try and get the real verifiable story of what was going on. And then I got access to all of the documents. One of my friends at the DOD actually sent me a disc that had all the documents that are out there on it. And I was just sifting through all those and trying to put together a really good timeline of events because there's so much going on. It's so convoluted. And I got access to all of the SRI documents. I got the drawings from Pat Price and Ingo Swann. And when you're reading through these, you're like, holy shit, this is a real phenomenon, And where a lot of this starts is with SRI, like you were mentioning, which is Stanford Research Institute. But it turns out that the government was also doing studies on parapsychology with Duke University in the 30s, Parapsychological Foundation in New York in the 50s, Mind Science Foundation in the 60s, and other research foundations and centers even earlier than SRI. But the one that really kicked it off was SRI in the 70s. So I think it's important to establish a little background here first on SRI, because a lot of these programs, they went through a bunch of different name changes and they switched hands a lot, and it's very convoluted in there. But the very first research project from SRI was called Syndicate, and that from 42 to 46, and that was funded by the CIA. Right, CIA was directly funding SRI from 42 to 46, and then it was cut in 46. So SRI was, it's important here because to establish what SRI was. SRI was basically a government contractor, right? And one of their very first study was for the Air Force in 47. And the Air Force was wanting to determine the expansion potential of the aircraft industry, right, during World War II. So SRI found that it would take too long to escalate the production in an emergency. So in 48, SRI began research and consultation with Chevron Corporation to develop an artificial substitute for coconut oil in soap production. So the reason for mentioning really that is to establish that, again, SRI was a government contractor. And what do we know most about government contractors, right? They're a front for the intelligence community. So, and this is also establishing that SRI worked for the Air Force prior, which is very important to when we get into things here later on. So SRI formally separated from Stanford University in 1970, became known as SRI International in 77. But in 72, the U.S. Army Surgeon General, through the Medical Intelligence Information Agency, together with the DIA, they published studies in Soviet block work in psychoenergetics. And also in that same year, SRI, Stanford Research Institute, started their research on psychoenergetics in 72 with Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ, which is really interesting with Hal Puthoff because he's onto this UFO phenomenon now.
I know.
He's doing all the UFO stuff. So there's a really big connection here between remote viewing, MK Ultra, and the UFO and ET phenomenon,
and intelligence, obviously.
All intelligence, Air Force doing MK Ultra programs after the CIA stopped in 85 and all that. So it's there's a lot of connections here. So they did a series of investigations on the psychic phenomena sponsored and funded by the CIA. They had consciousness researchers, Ingo Swann and Pat Price, and they started that research program project known as Syndicate in 73. And Syndicate was a SRI program, like a unit to determine if remote viewing and psychoenergetic phenomenon was real. Because if it was possible that the subjects at SRI could be using some sort of psychic powers to collect intelligence information, could they subliminally be getting the information on the target or somehow getting it from memory? So this is where they hit everyone with a bunch of tests. And during the testing, Ingo Swann was given a coordinate, and he described, everyone should be really familiar with this if they know about the remote viewing projects at SRI. This was really detailed in the documentary that Russell Targ put together called Psychic Spies. But it's important to establish a baseline of what was happening, how these programs actually became a thing. But he described some kind of military base in the woods, and the coordinate was then given to a gentleman, a businessman that was just referred to as Pat in the official documents. But now we know his name was Pat Price. So when Pat got the coordinates to verify Ego Swan's remote viewing of the suspected underground military base, he described the same thing, but in very large detail. And this is what really opened my mind that this is really real, because when you're reading this document, dude, he's explaining everything. He's explaining wind speed, surrounding area, what the base looked like, that it was in West Virginia, and all of this different stuff. And he's drawing it all out. He's doing little diagrams of everything that he's seen. So Russell Targ then asked him to view the location again and see if he could get inside and look for the documents to try and obtain code word information with his psychic abilities, with his mind. And he did. And on the top of the desk of this underground base installation, he saw papers labeled fly trap, mine run. And there was a cabinet on the north side of the wall labeled Operation Pool. There was folders on the inside of the cabinet labeled cue ball, 14 ball, 4 ball, 8 ball, rack up. And these were all code names for this military installation. And he said that the site vaguely seemed to resemble a name called Hay Fork or Haystack. And he even got the names of the generals at the facility. This is a top secret military installation. Nobody knows about this. Right. Installation in West Virginia, because Hal Putoff gave him a coordinate that was of his cabin in West Virginia, and he didn't see the cabin. Neither Ingo Swann saw the cabin or Pat Price saw the cabin. They saw the base that was just right over the other side of the hill. All right, so we got the names of these generals, and I believe one of them was Colonel R.J. Hamilton, Major General George Nash or George R. Nash, Major John C. Calhoun or something like that. And this really got the attention of the DIA and Army Intelligence and really all of the intelligence and military community, right? And they got really interested in this phenomenon. I think that it really scared the shit out of them, right?
Yeah.
Because if someone can get access to a top secret military installation that nobody knows about and get some sort of classified information out of that, then who else is doing this?
Right. That's the natural question, is if we can do it, maybe someone else can do it too. And they've been doing it for a lot longer than we have. We just figured this out now. We got to keep this under wraps, or, you know, maybe we need to put everything in a filing cabinet, even in our underground bases.
Right. And there's also the Chinese were doing this. They were experimenting on children. It's mentioned in these documents that they were doing psychic experimentation on children. And the Russians were also attempting to use this kind of phenomenon to collect some sort of intelligence data. That's the suspected thing, is that the Russians were using it. There really isn't any proof that they were actually using psychics to collect intelligence data for the Cold War or not. I think that that might have been some sort of an excuse to start an actual program. But I did have access to a Russian document that talked about remote viewing, but it didn't talk about anything that they were using it on their military to collect any kind of intelligence data. It was just kind of like a brief description of, you know, of remote viewing and psychic phenomenon. So we fast forward a little bit into 1976, the Missile Intelligence Agency informally expressed interest in the U.S. Replication of the claimed Soviet experiments in psychic energetics, because I think that this was an excuse to get the intelligence community involved. And but they apparently received intel that the Soviets were doing research, so they had to play catch up, apparently, which again, I don't really know. There's not too much information about that. Really what SRI developed a small program for the Missile Intelligence Agency, and the Missile Intelligence Agency then awarded SRI a one-year research and development contract. And during that same time, the Army Material Systems Analysis Agency was involved in the investigation of remote viewing concepts with SRI. So they were contracting SRI during this entire time. So you had the CIA funding SRI. You had the Army intelligence working, contracting SRI as well. So in 77, the U.S. Army Intelligence and Security Command was established a project team under the Assistant Deputy Chief of Staff for Human Intelligence and implemented the Gondola Wish program. This was the very first remote viewing program that was an official program. And it was in Fort Meade, Maryland, in 78. And Army intelligence concluded that there was sufficient evidence to warrant the program to explore intelligence collection of psychoenergetics, remote viewing, and ESP. And the Army quickly canceled the Gondola Wish program and placed a security blanket over the Army's interest in psychoenergetics, and then implemented a new program toward intelligence collection using remote viewing. And that project was called Grill Flame. And this new program was to use remote viewing as a data collection or intelligence collection method. So by 1978, INSCOM, which is the United States Army Intelligence and Security Command, had the personnel they wanted in this program. It had all been elected and training was initiated. And the person to train those Army personnel, that was Ingo Swan from SRI, because they were contracted SRI during this entire time. And Ingo was there to really teach the Army personnel on how to remote view. He, you know, created a protocol, and there was levels to all these protocols, and it's really difficult in this one, because everyone from the program that I've interviewed has said that Ingo Swan was directly involved in training these Army personnel on how to remote view. But at the same time, they also say that nobody from SRI ever walked through the doors at Fort Meade. Like, they weren't allowed on the military base. So I'm trying to figure out how Ingo Swan trained these Army personnel if he was never on the military base.
I might have an answer for you, because I saw an interview with Ingo Swan where he talked about getting black bagged one night, and they showed up at his house. They said, would you be interested in working on this? They said, as soon as you can show us that you're at, I think it was like 65% accuracy rate on these tests that we're doing, then we're going to want to use you. And they said, you got to the 65% rate, you know, are you ready to do this program? We'd like to talk to you, but we can't talk to you about it here. Is it okay if we kind of put a hood over your head and black bag you and disappear you to a place? And he said that he did that. He said yes. They took him to a place. They took him to, he said he had the feeling that he was in an elevator that was going way, way, way down. He wound up in some underground base. Now, I think, I'm not sure if it was on this particular occasion, but they asked him anyway, my point is that could have been at a military base that where there's no record of him being there and he didn't get in his car and drive there, but he was there. So it could be that. But I think that if it wasn't in this instance, there was at least a different instance around this same time, 1977, where the Voyager probe was on its way to Jupiter and it was getting close and it was a couple months out and they asked him to remote view Jupiter and they said, what do you see? And he said, there's a ring around. I see a ring. Yes. And they said, well, you're seeing Saturn. And he's like, I know what Saturn looks like and it's not Saturn. I'm telling you, there's a ring around Jupiter. And they said, well, you must be mistaken. And he says, well, we'll find out when the probe gets there. And the probe got there and 4 months later, and he said, oh, I'll be damned, there's a ring around Jupiter. He said, yeah, I told you there was. You know, like I wasn't asking if you thought there was, I'm telling you, so I can see it. I see it. It's there, you know, and they're like, oh shit, this is, you know, like this guy's right. So anyway, this is, you know, I don't know if that was part of the disappearing him down into some underground bunker to train people or not, but I do remember him saying he had that experience and he thought it was very like spy versus spy of them to like put the bag on his head.
Well, that's interesting that you say that about Ingo Swann, because I think something very similar happened to Pat Price.
I wouldn't bet. I think if I'm correct in this assessment, from the guys that I've heard talking, the guys that are in that industry talking about it, I think they put Pat Price as number one, right? As the yes. best remote viewer. Like even Ingo Swann is like, Pat Price is the shit. Like, but Ingo was known to be amazing by everybody else. But I think Pat Price, is that what you found too? That he was considered to be the best remote viewer ever?
Yeah, their focus was really on Pat Price, and it's really interesting. Now, this is just theory and speculation. There's no proof of anything that I'm about to say. I'm just making it clear from the documentation that I just talked about. All that was factual information. This is speculation and theory here that I'm getting ready to talk about. So the CIA split Pat Price from SRI International, because it was mainly in the beginning, it was just Ingo Swann and Pat Price. So the CIA split Pat from SRI around 74 to work with them directly. So there was no intermediaries there. There wasn't any Russell Tyrie. There wasn't any Hal Puthoff in there. It was just Pat working directly with the CIA. And what's interesting is that he died less than a year later. He died in 75 in California. He was found in a hotel room, just dead. You know, and that's pretty suspicious. And not only when you look at the events that was leading up to Pat Price's death, he called his friends and his family. He told them cryptically his goodbyes. Right. He left a very big life insurance policy for his wife and his kids before he died. There was reportedly a man with a black briefcase that came in to inspect the body. He left. He was cremated without his family's knowledge. His family wasn't called that he was dead until after he was cremated.
Oh,
when does that ever happen?
He was alive. They didn't kill him. He's so too valuable.
Yeah, way too valuable. And that's what Uri Geller told Russell Targ in the documentary Third Eye Spies as well.
Yeah.
And, because Russell Targ went to Uri Geller and was asking him about Pat Price because Russell Targ thought that he knew more information about Pat. And he went to him and Uri was basically like, listen, he was kind of cryptically trying to tell Russell Targ what was going on, right? Without outright telling him. He was like, listen, they never kill people like this. It's like killing a goose that lays golden eggs. They just don't do it. Yeah. Never. So, and Russell Targ wasn't receptive toward that because, you know, it was his friend. It was like his best friend, you know? But I think that that's exactly what happened. I think that they struck a deal with Pat Price to fake his death for him to go and work for them under the guise that he's dead, right? Because no one would be looking for the most powerful psychic in the world if everyone thought that he was dead.
The ultimate sheep dipping, huh?
Yep. I think that that's what happened. And again, that's just theory and speculation.
I think it's reasonable speculation, though, because like you said, nobody does. It's just the way they handled the death is mysterious and fake. And, you know, you could benefit from having a spy that everyone thinks is no longer around.
Exactly. And I think that, I mean, the people that talk about these deep underground military installations that I think are personally legit, because I think that a lot of them exist now, whether they're extraterrestrial bases, and I don't necessarily believe in all of that. I think that there are legit deep underground military bases. Oh, yeah. And the people that I've listened to this talked about them, that's been inside them, comment that there are people that are working down there in those military bases that never leave.
Yes.
They're there for their entire life. They live there, they eat there, and they die there. They basically just create a ghost. Yeah. So it's highly possible that that's what they did with Pat Price. So when we get into, I'm going to get back to the documents here because it's, you know, kind of, it's really important to get this out in the timeline of events. So the Girl Flame operational unit, they ran into an issue. And the issue was, is would the information obtained from these remote viewers and psychics be reasonable and be accurate, right? And if so, would these remote viewings and the things that these remote viewers and psychics were seeing be accepted and used by the intelligence community? So on September 4th, 79, Army ACSI task INSCOM to locate a missing Navy aircraft. And this was the first Girl Flame operational remote viewing session. And the remote viewer that located the missing aircraft was within 15 miles of where it was down. And based on these results, INSCOM was tasked to work in on operational targets. So this forced the hand of ACSI to head into full swing operations and skip over a lot of the training phases of the unit. And again, this is coming directly out of the DIA unclassified documents of 1979. Now, this correlates in these documents with what President Jimmy Carter was saying in 95. Do you remember him mentioning that the CIA, the head of the CIA, was that contacted a lady in California to find a missing, a down missing plane in Africa, and they found it within miles of where it crashed. Well, Jimmy Carter was, what he said was like half true, right? It wasn't just a lady in California. That was kind of like a misdirection, because I don't think Jimmy wanted to reveal to the world that they had a psychic remote spy installation unit at Fort Meade, that it was a real military intelligence operation. Right. So this was partly split up. It was Dale Graff's small remote viewing activity at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, specifically an Air Force enlisted woman named Rosemary Smith. And the missing plane was also found with assistance of Gary Langford at SRI. And SRI helped on this as well. So it's not that Jimmy Carter's story was wrong. It's just not exactly how he told it.
Right.
And so then comes along this, in 1980, this memorandum, this Perry memorandum, which cut funding for psychoenergetics activities that didn't include intelligence application efforts, because the finding the missing plane wasn't a intelligence application effort. It wasn't like an official thing. So in 1981, a few months later, ACSI transferred the project Girl Flame Management to INSCOM, Army INSCOM, Army Intelligence and Security Command, and they combined their efforts. And this wasn't the only time that the units had been transferred or combined. The DIA and Army ACSI signed a joint Girl Flame unit to implement a 3-year program. So the DIA's role in this joint operation was threat analysis and countermeasures using established psychics, primarily through SRI contracts, because, again, they've been working with SRI since 78. The U.S. Army's role, INSCOM role, was to apply remote viewing program, use assigned personnel and contract to enhance their capability. And there were so many hands in the pot on this, and the merging of the DIA and Army Intelligence Program also formalized cooperations among the Secretary of the Army, Army General Counsel, Assistant Surgeon General for Medical R&D, Vice Chief of Staff for the Army, NSA, CIA, and Navy. God, so all of these people are all involved in this. And I just had Angela Ford on recently. I had her on last week, and she kind of cleared this up a little bit for me. She said that NSA, CIA, and Navy were basically their customers. So this was a Army Intelligence DIA joint program at this time. And the NSA, CIA, and Navy were tasking Army Intelligence and DIA to remote view on different targets. That's the way that she explains it, which makes a lot of sense. I think possibly it could be something different than that, but that's her explanation for it, and it's a solid explanation. So until 82, when this budget subcommittee then cut the funding to Girl Flame because they thought the project had been double budgeted, one funding coming from Army Intelligence and another coming from DIA, when they were just both working on it together, it was just a joint unit. But they let the DIA complete their third year. So at the end of 82, INSCOM, Army Intelligence, they terminated their former involvement with Girl Flame and the DIA. But Army Intelligence then opened up another special access program called Center Lane in 83. And I think it was Dr. Richard Dallinger, that he signed a new memorandum allowing resources to be used to maintain the support of Army remote viewing special access program Center Lane, reversing the Perry Memorandum of 1980 with the funding by the Security and Investigative Activities. So in 83, the Army remote viewing SAP program Center Lane, it was decided that it should be continued and under overall management of the DIA. So in 1984, it was decided that Center Lane Special Access Program ran by the Army should be more responsive to strategic and national level tasking. So in order to get this, they needed to merge their unit. This is the second merging with the DIA Girl Flame unit. So in 85, the transfer from Army's Special Access Program Center Lane project to DIA's Girl Flame program was complete, and it became a DOD Special Access Program ran by the DIA.
Gotcha.
And yeah. Then the funding,
a lot of acronyms.
so many, dude. It's so convoluted. And I'm glad that I actually read through all these things because it gives a really good timeline here. So the DOD is involved. DIA is running it. And the funding was restored because it was a pure intelligence data collection program, no R&D stuff. So we get another name change there. Program then switches names again. Then it's called Sunstreak. And the mission of Sunstreak was to undertake operational intelligence application using an aspect of psychoenergetics known as remote viewing. Now, it also states in this document, not only the Soviet threat, which again is unproven, like I stated earlier, there isn't any documented evidence that I can find that the Soviets were using psychoenergetics to collect intelligence data, but it's still referred to heavily in these documents. And they also, like I was mentioning earlier, they were also referred to claims that the Chinese scientists were using remote viewing on their experiments with children. And this is another really interesting aspect of this Sunstreak document, was that it says that SRI International was trying to duplicate this. They were trying to duplicate these studies that the Chinese was doing with children. Now, I don't know if that means that they were also working with children, but it's interesting because on the paragraph on SRI, right under the paragraph of them saying that the Chinese were using children as psychics and remote viewers, it looked like it was attempted to be like scribbled out. Like someone took a pen and just tried to, I don't know if that was just a copying from an actual document to the, you know, the digitized version of it, and it somehow got messed up. But I thought that that was pretty interesting. That it
looks bad to work with kids on psychic stuff like that, but whatever. I mean, we've done worse. At least, I mean, as far as I know, at least we weren't murdering them like we've done in experiments in the past. So I guess just trying to see if they're psychic is not great, but maybe not the worst thing ever.
Well, I think the theory was is that children are more open to psychic abilities than an adult would be.
Yeah.
Right? And I think that we all have the ability. All of the personnel that I've interviewed from the program, they all state that we have the ability to do it, you know, but it's just, can we tap in to that ability? And there's a bunch of different connections here between the Monroe Institute. Monroe Institute is mentioned several times within these documents. Army intelligence paid the Monroe Institute $2,000 to take their Army personnel to study with Robert Monroe, which it gets really convoluted in there too, because Joe McMonagall was actually dating Robert Monroe's daughter, and he wanted to get more funding for the Monroe Institute. And then he, from out of the Stargate project, he went to the Monroe Institute, which the Monroe Institute is to induce an out-of-body experience by putting different frequencies, listening frequencies into your head to induce an out-of-body experience, which I still think is very interesting. There's definitely a connection here between out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences. A lot of the remote viewers and psychics that I've talked to, not so much the ones that have been trained that were a part of the official DIA and Army intelligence program, but natural psychics, natural people that have the ability to remote view, like Ingo Swann, like Pat Price, they weren't trained. None of those people were ever trained.
No, they just knew how to do it.
They just automatically knew how to do it. And Ingo Swann talks several times in interviews that he had out-of-body experiences whenever he was a kid, like because he was bullied. He was a gay man. It's not a secret. He was gay, and he was being bullied for being gay. So he would have out-of-body experiences. And my theory is that out-of-body experiences and near-death experiences are somehow connected to psychic abilities. It somehow unlocks these psychic abilities.
Yeah.
And then when you look at the trauma aspect of that, because that would be a form of trauma that Ingo Swann went through with being bullied because he's gay. Who cares that he's gay? It doesn't matter. But it's just a part of the story. And when you look at the MK Ultra programs, what were those programs doing? They were traumatizing people, right? They were torturing people to rid them of certain classified information. That was the first objective of the MKUltra program that was ran by the Army intelligence, was to clear people of memories that they had of classified information that high up military personnel had, so that they can, if they quit the department, they wouldn't have access to any of that classified information anymore. And then it evolved into something else. And then it turned into implanting memories inside of people's heads, implanting false thoughts, implanting false memories into their head to make them believe something happened when it really didn't happen. But trauma is involved in the MKUltra programs. And I think that they realized that psychic abilities was a byproduct of the MKUltra process through the torture and the trauma that they would endure. And that's why Sidney Gottlieb, which was the head of the MKUltra programs, was funding SRI International through the CIA. The CIA was funneling money through Sidney Gottlieb to send to SRI to study psychics and remote viewers.
Because he was seeing that with his MK Ultra people were having these psychic abilities as he was torturing the shit out of them. And then he's like, oh, well, these guys are studying psychic abilities too. We know there's some there because we're seeing it in our own stuff. So we'll give them money too. SRI wasn't torturing people as far as we know, were they?
No, not that I'm aware of. I think that they found people that were naturally already had the abilities to do it, you know, like Pat Price and like Ingo Swann. And then how a lot of the people that got into the official DIA and Army intelligence program was Dr. David Morehouse got in. He'll tell you that it had nothing to do with his near-death experience. He'll say that it didn't have anything to do with that. But he was working on several special access programs before he was brought into the unit at Fort Meade. And what got him into that program was he had to take a bunch of different lie detector tests. When you're in a special access program, that is, no one took lie detector tests within the psychic spy remote viewing ESP program, but in other special access programs, they always had to take a lie detector test. And he failed one time. And the commander of the special access program that he was in asked him, you know, what was going on? You know, why are you all of a sudden, why did this test come back as inconclusive? You know, then he told him about this, that he was shot in the head during combat and he had like a near death experience. So then the commander brought out all of the documents from the, it was Sunstreak at that time, the Sunstreak documents, and showed that to him and asked him if he would be interested in going into that program.
Oh, okay.
So there's a bunch of different ways in how they got in there. Lynn Buchanan got in because of his, PK ability, which is basically, kind of like remote perturbation of objects, like he could like move objects with his mind. He could destroy objects with his mind. Whenever he was overseas, he accidentally destroyed like, I don't know, $40,000. I'm not sure on the exact number. I'd have to go back and listen to the interview with him, but a lot of money worth of computer equipment. And they were like, okay, well, let's try and get him into the program to try and take down enemy missiles with his mind. Right, that would be a really good thing to be able to do if another country was attacking you with missiles and you could take the missile out of the air, crash it into the ocean.
Yeah.
So this Sunstreak, this Sunstreak program ran until 91, and then it was changed to Stargate by Del Graff, which again I've had on my show. He changed the name from what he was telling me because he felt that it described what they were doing better with the human potential aspect of, you know, the remote viewing phenomenon. So in 95, the program was to be transferred to the CIA from the DOD and DIA. CIA got their hands on it and they basically lied and said that no intelligence data had ever been collected from the program and they shut it down. Which when you're reading through these documents, you're seeing the things that these remote viewers are drawing. They're describing the wind altitude. They're describing all of these, the environment, surrounding areas, how green the grass is, you know,
super
what the
detailed, like surprisingly and, detailed, like, cause they're there and they're getting all of these different readings that could, you know, people would think it's like, oh, you're just like, it's just like putting a camera someplace. It's like, no, it's like putting a person someplace. Well, they'll tell you what they're smelling and they'll tell you what the temperature is like. It's really, it's wild stuff.
Yeah. And they're very descriptive. It's all descriptive. They're writing it all down. So it's a huge lie that the CIA said that there wasn't any valuable intelligence data that was ever collected. Why would you run a program for almost 20 years? It ran for approximately 19 years. Very close to 20 years, if you weren't getting any success out of it.
Of course.
There's no way. No way that you didn't get any intelligence data out of it. But remember, the CIA had its hands in this the entire, from the jump, right? They were funding SRI International from 73 to 75.
Yeah.
And which is really interesting because 75 was the year that Pat Price died.
Right.
you know, and Pat Price was working with the CIA directly.
Yeah.
So then, according to Dr. Paul Smith, the Air Force then jumped in after the CIA cut funding, and they started funding SRI and the DIA, and Army Intelligence also had a contract with SRI. NSA had its hands in the pot too. So, you know, that's really the whole history of the Stargate remote viewing program. And Dr. Verona from the DIA was also funding SRI International. So you had three different fundings and contracts all going to SRI. They were all contracted in with the with DIA, with Army Intelligence. CIA was funding it. CIA was funding it through Sidney Gottlieb. Dr. Verona from the DIA was funding SRI International. And then he's the one that got the program then switched and to keep going in 85. Him and Del Graff basically kept the program going. They were going to shut it down. And Dr. Verona from the DIA stepped in along with Del Graff. And they were like, well, instead of shutting the program down, why don't you just fully transfer it to us? And that's when Sunstreak came about, and then it was changed to Stargate in 91 by Del Graft. So yeah, it's not a program to open up actual real Stargates and portals to travel to other dimensions and other realities and all that. It's a legit DIA Army Intelligence special access program on the data collection of intelligence information on foreign assessments.
Wow. I wonder how much information they got from this program. I mean, because I've watched more of like the, I don't know, I guess we'd call it like retail level stuff. The stuff that goes out on YouTube, Farsight Institute, Dick Allgaier, Daz Smith, Courtney Brown, all these guys that will do it on a whiteboard, you know, and show their work while they're and talk through what they're seeing, what they're feeling, and it'll be an hour long or maybe 2 hours long. Fascinating work to me. I fully understand why people would be dismissive of it, because it just seems so like airy fairy and fake. But when you've got these guys like in the with regard to Dick Allgaier and Daz Smith, that these guys were working for Farsight, but Allgaier's in Hawaii, Daz is in London, and they're giving them, when they give them, like, they task them with this, what they're giving these guys are just coordinates. They're giving them a set of, like, eight numbers. It'll be, like, 0754, and then, like, 6215, you know, and then they give it to them, and these guys look at the numbers, and they start drawing, they start clearing themselves, and then they start drawing, they start trying to go, they go through like this sort of progression and kind of learn how, you know, there's a pattern and there's a process to it. They say, we do this, and they start drawing. And then, you know, you match them up with one another, and they're not identical, but God damn, they're close, you know, and you start going, how is it? I'm like, I get it. If they're really trying to fake us out, but I don't think they are. There's too much of this stuff that is, you know, listen, I've done enough hallucinogens to know that there's a world outside of our conscious brain. And if you can tap into that, there's like, there's magic powers out there, you know, and some people are more insightful and more connected to that than others. And so I've learned to not be dismissive about it, because I think just because it sounds crazy doesn't mean that it really is. I wonder, do we know what sort of information these guys got? Or is that the program's not classified anymore, but the information still is? Or how does this all work?
Well, there's not too much information within the documents that point to exactly what they would be remote viewing. Now, talking to the remote viewers that was within the unit, they don't really give too much information either. They're trying to kind of hold on to that classification that they had. But a few of them would talk to me about, they would just make it ambiguous, right? They would just be like, yeah, we were just collecting intelligence data. And apparently they didn't get very much feedback on the targets that they were working either. Because apparently something happens if you get like a tube big of a head of yourself. You know, if you're getting all this stuff right, then it's some kind of it's a higher possibility that you get something wrong, and it's really wrong.
Right.
So Army intelligence and DIA really didn't give them too much feedback on the targets that they were viewing. They would just kind of collect that information and then take it to their superiors, and whatever their superiors did with it is what they did with it. Yeah. Wasn't so much they would be like, oh yeah, hey guys, hey unit of psychic remote spy people, you were right about this whole thing, and we used that information and it was right. You know, they didn't really do that too much, from my understanding, and that could have been done for a couple of different reasons. It could be that they really did want to somehow shut the program down, and so they didn't give the remote viewers and the psychics too much credit. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to give the psychics.
Yeah, you could see how that would impact somebody if you kept telling them, man, you just nailed it, you got it all right, and then they start thinking that they're hot shit. Or consequentially, if you start saying, you know, you didn't really do very well, then they start to get in their own heads. I mean, this is obviously we're dealing with a mental phenomenon. You don't want to give somebody you don't want to drag their ego into it, because they're actively trying to remove themselves from the process, their ego, their preconceived ideas. That's why when I was watching the Farsight guys, it was interesting because that Courtney Brown was saying, you know, we had been asked, you know, all the viewers and myself had been asked to remote view 9/11. And he said, I just told him right off the bat, we're never going to do it. We're just never going to do it, because it's too, you know, you'd know right away, and in your preconceived ideas of what happened on that day would be brought into it. And that would skew the results. And so he told them, we're just never, ever going to do 9/11. And then like 15 years later, he had them remote view 9/11, but they didn't know what they were viewing. But they had it in, you know, they did have a preconceived idea that we're never going to do it. So they weren't expecting it when they wound up actually doing it. And it's a great 2 hour, it's two 2 hour videos of these team remote viewing like seven different numbers and seven different things. And one of them is a special ops team that is in the basement level following maps, rigging columns with explosives and things like that. And you're like, oh shit, that's building seven. You know what I mean? So like there was a lot of, they had a guy, they drew this face of a guy, you know, this guy's in this, I don't know, it was like a room with no windows. It seems to be underground, but I can't tell for sure. They drew the guy's face, who is sort of in control, and you look at it and it is like 100% Donald Rumsfeld's face, you know, and you're like, oh my God, you know. So I, you know, again, how much of it is, what's the accuracy rate? I don't know. I don't know. And I always have to be skeptical, but I did an episode about the remote viewing of 9/11 just because I thought it was an interesting angle that nobody was really talking about. And I'm not pretending to say that these guys, you know, that they know exactly how it went down. This is just a piece of information, but it's, you know, these guys have the ability to do things that we can't even, you know, I mean, you can't even imagine doing something like that. The test I saw, reading a card that was up on top of a cabinet, like a file cabinet in a room that was locked, and they, you know, they're just having the guys go through these tests, and they're saying, you know, there's a card up there with some numbers on it, what are they? And the guy remote viewed it, wrote the numbers down, and they're like, god damn it, it was the numbers, you know. So some of that stuff, it's kind of hard to explain how they do it. Did your guys ever, the people that you interviewed, did they ever mention how they got into it? I mean, were they predisposed with sort of psychic powers as kids or something? Like, how do you wind up in this line of work?
Well, what's interesting, you're talking about 9/11 there. Lynn Buchanan talked about that he was approached by men in black, which were government agents, as he described them. And they approached him. See, remote viewing, you can do so much with remote viewing. There's so many different ways that you can do it. There's a bunch of different versions of it. There's CRV, there's transatlantic remote viewing, there's remote perturbation, there's remote telekinesis, there's remote influencing. And if people don't think remote influencing is real, it's very real. There's a document that was written that I have access to by Ed May, and he lays out all of the steps in order to remote influence someone. Now, Lynn Buchanan calls this remote control.
Okay.
So you can remote view and you can influence somebody with your own thoughts, your own ideas, your own beliefs, and control them to do something that they wouldn't do under normal circumstances. And he was approached by these men in black. They asked him if he could kill Osama bin Laden with his mind. And he declined, right? But I asked him in that interview, and I was like, could you have done it? Could you have killed Osama bin Laden with your mind if you had to?
Right.
And he said, absolutely. Absolutely, I could have. So that just opened up a whole new can of worms for me, right? It's transferred from psychic spy to psychic assassin to psychic influence to psychic control of people. You know, and this makes a lot of sense. So then I'm thinking, based off of what he told me in our interview, I was like, okay, well, that would kind of be the lazy way to do it, to just kill someone outright with your mind, right? Because that doesn't create a lot of upheaval. That doesn't create political imbalance. That doesn't create chaos, right? What you would want to do is remote influence, remote control somebody else to do the assassination or do the killing for you.
Right. Yeah. Remote influence his first lieutenant and have him blow him up for you. And then that would create there's no power in like, oh, he just had a heart attack. You know, these guys never just have heart attacks, right? They
are, nope.
they got to get whacked. They got to get blown up, assassinated, deposed, something like in jailed, imprisoned, stick a knife up their ass like Gaddafi. You know, one of these things is going to happen in order to capitalize on it through the media and use that to propagandize or to create frustration or joy and, you know, whatever, create an emotional response to it. You don't get that response when somebody just keels over after eating dinner and, you know, and that's it.
Yeah. What would have been more entertaining? And this is just an example. Would it be more entertaining for Osama bin Laden to die in a cave from a heart attack? Or is it more macho in America to have SEAL Team 6 go in and take him out, regardless if you believe that he was actually taken out or if he wasn't? It doesn't matter. I'm just using that as an example.
You know, I get it.
It was put out there that, you know, we went in and killed him. You know, but if he would have just died in a cave somewhere, no one would have cared.
No.
It was a win for America whenever SEAL Team 6 went in and took him out. Right, so this would be the same thing with remote controlling and remote influencing somebody else to do the murder or the assassination for you. It creates way more upheaval, creates way more propaganda for people to be able to use. And this connects to the whole Manchurian candidate aspect of MKUltra as well. I mean, there's a real legitimate program called Project Spellbinder, which Sidney Gottlieb was trying to mind control in MKUltra a individual in order to assassinate Fidel Castro. Right? And the program didn't go through, and there isn't any real documentation for it, because after the program didn't work out, they went in and trashed that whole program. They got rid of the documents along with supposedly 100 to 200 different sub-projects of MKUltra. So the Project Spellbinder program went away, along with another 100 to 200 MKUltra subprojects as well. They were all destroyed, so no one could ever know exactly what they're doing. But there was theories and speculation that there was another MKUltra program underneath the one that the CIA was doing, which was experimentation on children. So a lot of these things are connected. The out-of-body experiences are connected. The near-death experiences are connected. MKUltra is connected. Remote viewing is connected. Psychic abilities are connected. Monroe Institute is connected. It's all lumped in together, and there's proof and evidence of that. It's just, I'm not absolutely 100. We can only theorize and speculate on what they were actually doing and trying to piece everything together. But I think that this is a really big deal that a lot of people kind of brush over. They don't pay attention to it, right? They don't want to read through all of these documents, you know, and get the real factual information behind it. You know, they just want to take people's, you know, word for it and not actually go through there and research, go through and look through those MKUltra documents. It's very eye-opening. You know, you'll see that everything that's happening in our reality, they were testing on back then. They were legitimately doing that.
I wonder, to take sort of a detour from this a little bit, I wonder if there is, if this technology, this remote viewing technology, is being used in the corporate world, because corporate espionage is a big, big business. If you're the CEO of Pepsi and you want to find out the formula to Coca-Cola and it's hidden in some safe somewhere, and you got a Pat Price type guy that you can bring in as a consultant, you know what I mean? Or you're Lockheed Martin and you're working on some new technology, but you know that some Israeli firm is working on something similar and you want to get the blueprints from them. What's to stop you from privatizing this this skill and using it for corporate espionage?
Absolutely. A lot of the remote viewers that were a part of the unit have stated that they have been approached by the intelligence community, the military, for them to do remote viewings for them in a unofficial capacity. Now, they wouldn't ever tell me, you know, what they were viewing or whatever, because they want to hold on to that secrecy. But it proves that the government is still interested in this phenomenon. If they didn't think that it was real, they didn't think that it actually worked, then why would they reach out to Lynn Buchanan? Why would they reach out to Angela Ford? Why would they reach out to Dr. David Morehouse or Dr. Paul Smith, right? They know that it's real, and they know that it's accurate, and they know that it works. So now they all deny that there is an official program that is still running. But I think that by as many people that were involved in the funding and a part of the DIA and Army intelligence program, it's not out of the realm of possibility that there's been a program that's been running ever since the Stargate program was shut down in 95. It's exactly like the MKUltra programs. The Air Force has been running MKUltra programs since the CIA shut down. The CIA got in trouble for it in 85, and they were forced to shut it down. The Air Force has been running those programs ever since.
Of course. Just judging by the number of name changes you had in the 70s and early 80s, you know that if they're gathering this much information, it's this valuable that they've poured money in, and money's coming in from different departments all in the SRI, and they're changing names all the time. And then why would you ever get rid of this wealth of information that's at your fingertips that nobody really understands? You know, you sort of have control of it. You've got some of the best guys in the world. You would never stop doing this. You would only lie and say that you stopped doing it and rebrand it, take it underground, maybe literally underground, and then keep it going. You know, move it from division to division, change the names a bunch of times, bring in some people. You know, I can't imagine these people just stopping something like this, stopping MK Ultra. Yeah, it's bad optically. You know, you don't want that to be, you know, you don't want the general public to know that you're doing that. But if you're getting information from it, if it's beneficial, and it clearly is, because these programs went on for decades, right? So clearly they're getting something from it. The idea that they would all of a sudden decide, okay, well, this is bad if people know, so we'll stop doing it. I mean, when have they ever done anything like that? Never.
Never. They haven't. And I think that it evolved. And I think that it turned into something else because it's had an evolving nature since the inception of it. You know, I think that it has something to do with the MKUltra. I think it has something to do with the inducing the out-of-body experiences, because if out-of-body experiences is somehow connected to psychic abilities and they were studying that, then they could just create psychic spies. They don't have to go out there and find them anymore. They don't have to go out and be like, right, oh, hey, who's a good psychic that we could involve in this program that could possibly spread this information out to these people? No, you just have a bunch of people that are working in a deep underground military base that never leave the facility. You induce an out-of-body experience. You activate their psychic abilities in that kind of way. Now, whether that's through trauma, whether that's a natural inducing of an out-of-body experience to activate the psychic abilities, doesn't matter. They're still creating the abilities. So then you have created your own psychic assassin, your own psychic spy, your own remote control, your own remote influencing without anybody else ever knowing, because those people never leave those facilities.
Yeah. Yeah. You'd never know. Let's wrap up with this, because I'm going to ask you to speculate, but since you mentioned that Edwin May creating remote persuasion, I think they use remote persuasion on this for COVID.
I think it's a high possibility. Now, whether this was coming from human beings or not, I'm not too sure, right? Because it would be very difficult to, you'd have to have a lot of human beings remote persuading people and remote influencing people to get away with this large of an operation, right? I think that what happened was they wanted to just remove human personnel out of the equation. Let's just take humans out. Let's develop some sort of technology that we can operate ourselves in order to remotely influence, remote persuade people that does not involve humans being able to do it. Hmm. And I think that that's what they did. I think that they created a technology, a remote device that can implant thoughts, ideas, and beliefs into people's heads, and also using the media. Of course, we know how dangerous the media is. All they have to do is perpetuate a certain thing, and then it gets into the consciousness of the population, and then they believe it, and then they can get away with it. We'll couple that with some sort of device that can directly implant thoughts, ideas, beliefs into your head to make you do things that you wouldn't normally do under normal circumstances. I think that that's exactly what they've done. And there's proof and evidence of that. I'm sure you're familiar with V2K. There's technology, there's devices to affect our nervous system. There's all of these different patents for these kinds of technologies that I think are very real. And I think that they wanted to completely remove the human element from it, because if it's just a technology, then there's no one to say that this is really happening, right?
Nobody to blame. No accountability.
One to blame. It's just the technology doing it.
Yeah. God damn, I love this topic, man. It's so fascinating. We dismiss this stuff as you know, science fiction at our own peril, because these people that know how it works, they understand that it's a real thing. And God, the possibilities for this are endless, really. Hey, what's the best place for people to find you, to catch up with Raised by Giants and to follow your work?
Raised by Giants on YouTube, Odyssey, Rockfin, Rumble, and all of the different podcast platforms. And if you would like to contact me personally, you can get a hold of me on Twitter at Raised by Giants 8 and on Instagram at Raised by Giants Pod. Thanks so much, Charlie. Appreciate you a lot, brother. It was a wonderful conversation, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for being on. You know, I love this stuff. I love you. You're the best, man. Hey, that's Ryder Lee. Everybody support his work, follow his stuff. If you are interested, you can reach out to me through the website, theoctopusofglobalcontrol.com. You can follow me on Twitter @macroaggression. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you again later.